All right, you all know the drill. When your number is called, step forward and repeat the phrase you've been given. Understand? Number one, step forward.
ESPN 97.5. Yeah, come on. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing? It's a Monday on The Usual Suspects. Hope y'all had a great Easter weekend and had all kinds of egg hunts and family affairs and everything, and now you're ready to get back to business on a Monday, whether it's work or fun. It's Barry, it's Nick, it's Joel. We are in studio and taking you for the next 3 hours. Fellas, what's going on?
What up? What up?
What's going on? How was y'all's Easter?
Family oriented. Got a lot of stuff done, and you guys can make fun of me all you want, but flew a kite with Taylor.
Nice.
And got, because
I don't know why you
weather,
lead with you guys can make fun of me all you want.
Got that bad boy up there, too.
Why did you lead with that?
Because you guys are anti-kid, and I got to do a lot of kid stuff.
Just because we're anti-kid doesn't mean, like, I got to meet my new nephew for the first time. I was geeked about that. I'm anti-kid for me, not anybody else. I don't want kids, but flying a kite with your kid's kind of a requirement at some point, right?
It's just weird because I did it when I was a kid, and then you got to try and remember all the things, like to get it airborne, to get it to keep climb, to do all these things. And I'm like, okay, we got it. At least it didn't like get up in the air and fall right down. And
I like that you went old school, because some of these millennial cats that are going to be parents soon, they're going to go fly their drone. Like they'll be flying a drone with their kid, not a kite. So I like that you went old school.
She, you know, I am old school anyway, but she's the one that requested it. She saw it somewhere in a book or something like that. She's like, I want a kite. Of course, Lisa went out and got her a kite. And then it was like, hey, why don't you go take Taylor and let's all go fly a kite? I was like, okay, well, there you go.
Hunt eggs.
She did that.
Yeah,
she did that. She got her Easter basket. It's pretty cool. I forgot about it. We got up on Sunday morning and I forgot it was Easter Sunday morning for a second. And then Lisa's like, Go take her upstairs real quick. I got to get her Easter basket together and everything. I'm like, all right. I was like, wow, I forgot about that. And then just to see the joy on her face to open it up and get the candy and all that stuff, she loved us.
So y'all do the hiding eggs in the backyard and she goes and finds them?
She did the Easter egg hunt at school.
So y'all don't do one at the house?
Yeah, so we didn't do one at the house. We just did, she had a basket.
Did y'all do Easter egg hunts, Nick?
Yeah.
Like
at school,
as a kid?
At school and at
your
house.
Okay. Yeah. I wonder, is it because she's an only child you didn't do it?
No.
Because, like, we would do...
You know what? Because in retrospect, I thought about it. Because my mom did one for us.
Yeah.
And then my grandma would do a second one. And we were like, we didn't care. I'm not a big candy person. I didn't care as much about the candy ones, but I wanted them plastic eggs because I knew damn well that those things had money in them.
Yeah.
My grandma would put money in them. I was like, those are the bad boys you want to find.
So, like, we would do that, but, like, we always had an egg hunt at the house. And then... We would still go, like, we'd go to a relative's house and do another one there. Mm-hmm. But, man, whenever we woke up, it was on. Like, it was on and popping. It was like, this is like Christmas in April, you know.
I was just going to say, it's almost like a second Christmas because you know you're going to cash in, you're going to get candy, you're going to get some cash.
Yeah.
But it makes more sense. I think if you had more friends to join Taylor, then I would have one at the house. Or if you had a spot that you could go to, whether it's relatives or friends. And do a and have her, like, you know, look for Easter eggs there.
Kind of the anti or the flip of what you were saying about with drones. The other thing is it's gotten too over the top precautionary at school. You know, Lisa was like, she was buying she bought, like, I think there were like 36 eggs with little different toys and things in it.
Mm-hmm.
But the school sends a list home. We'd really like you to donate eggs and or goodies for the eggs. However, no candy, no nuts, no peanut butter, no this, no that, no this. And I'm like,
this is the allergies. Because the allergies.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like.
That peanut butter allergy is literally, no pun intended, going to be the death of society. It's just ruining everything.
But then think about it. It rolls over.
This is how you thin the herd.
It rolls over because you can't have peanut butter cups or Reese's or things like that either.
I tell you what.
And I was like, can you just, why even have the egg hunt?
You know what they need to do? Every school district should just start an elementary school, a junior high school, and a high school that has nothing but, that the only students that go there are the ones with peanut allergies. That way everyone else can live a normal ass life and they can stay in their little bubble at the school with their peanut allergies because You can't even take peanut butter and jelly to school. You can't have Reese's peanut butter cups. Your kid can't enjoy the candy. Why is my kid not able to do what he wants to do because your kid can't beat up a peanut? I don't like that. There's going to be so many letters people with peanut. I'm going to get a letter from the Peanut Allergy Society of America or something. Can't make fun of people with a peanut allergy.
I just don't understand. Like, Lisa's mom comes to town and she'll pack Taylor a lunch. So for Taylor's lunch, when she's at school, she wants a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. Mm-hmm. And her mom didn't realize. We got a letter sent home with a warning and everything because Taylor had peanut butter at school. It's like no one else is eating it.
It's like they're showing up with crack or a gun. It's like it's peanut butter. I don't know. That would drive me insane. And it's weird. That wasn't a thing when we were a kid. Uh-huh. It's this thing that has developed. I don't know. That's weird.
But I was just always mad at the kid that got special privileges and always got to get a snack. He always got to eat a bag of Doritos because he was a quote-unquote diabetic. And as a kid, I didn't care. He looked normal to me. I'm like, this is some BS. I want some Doritos now.
I want some diabetes so I can have some Doritos. They're like, no, you don't. Yeah, I do. I want Doritos.
Pass the bag. Share the wealth. That ain't right.
If you have a kid in the car, maybe change the channel for a second. It's not bad. It's not bad, but I don't want them to hear this. If they're, Easter fans or Christmas fans, 3, 2. This was always, I always remember Easter for being the time of year my mom spoiled the fact that the Easter bunny wasn't a thing.
Really?
When I was a kid, yeah. Because I was, okay, so full disclosure, I maybe held on to it a little long. Like, I was maybe like 7, 8 and still believed. And she was like, I'm not having this no more. So I remember one year I was like, hey, mom, I think I'm going to ask the Easter bunny for a bike. She was like, that's probably not a good idea. And I was like, no, I'm going to tell the Easter bunny bring me a bike. And she was like, I wouldn't do that. I'm like, mom, I don't care what you say. This is between me and the Easter bunny. I'm going to get a bike from the Easter bunny. And I'll never forget this day. The most devastating day in my entire life. Because I remember she was getting ready. She was curling her hair. And I'm standing in the bathroom door. And I was like, no, I'm asking the Easter bunny for a bike. And she took a curler out of her hair. And she turned her head real slow and looked at me and goes, the Easter bunny's broke. And I went... You're the Easter bunny. She goes, that's right. And I'm Santa too. Now get out of here. That was it.
Wow.
That's how I found out. My mom was a cold blooded killer.
Well, you weren't going to shut up.
She was like, no, she was probably thinking, oh Lord, I'm going to have to tell this idiot now. He's going to be 16 talking about what he's going to ask Santa for Christmas. He's 8. Boy, you are 8 years old. This is too long. Yeah, man. She was cold about it. The Easter bunny's broke. And she didn't have to tell me twice. I knew exactly who the Easter bunny was because we were broke. I was like, oh, it's you. She was like, yep. And I'm Santa too. Now get out of here. I was like, damn.
Did y'all do egg decorating?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We decorated eggs.
My mom was
eggs
big on that.
My sister was scared of the Easter bunny, which is the most hilarious. She was like afraid of everything. She thought my mom was a witch. My sister, honest to God, would wake up in the middle of the night screaming because she thought my mom was a witch and was going to get her. That's your mom. But I remember like when I was young, I was maybe 5, 6 years old. I remember Easter night. My sister waking up screaming. And my mom was like, what is your problem? She's like, the Easter bunny, he's scratching at my window. She was like, what? So she was like, no, this is how she told us both times. Because she goes, I wasn't in the room. This is a family story. But she basically goes, he's not scratching at your window. She's like, yeah, he is. He's going to kill me. She's like, no, damn it. Look, I'm the Easter bunny. And she had to put on ears and like hop around. I'm the Easter bunny. My sister was a weirdo. At least I was just like, no, I'm going to get a bike.
My sister was just a damn chocoholic. I mean, she and my mom, and of course, before I knew that there was no Easter bunny, I was always pissed off because I didn't want the big chocolate bunny. Yeah. I just didn't want a solid milk chocolate bunny that was like 2.5 feet tall. And then I'd realize that I'd never eat it, but mysteriously, the ears were missing. Then the head was missing. And I'm finally like, Mom, what's going on? She's like, your sister has a bit of a chocolate problem.
I ate one of those, not like the 2-foot one,
yeah.
Or maybe it was the 2-foot one, the solid chocolate, not the hollow chocolate.
Right.
I ate one of those. I couldn't eat chocolate for 10 years. I was so sick. Like I was throwing up.
And you became like Sir Craps a lot?
Oh my God. It was disgusting. Like I couldn't see or smell chocolate or I would almost vomit because I ate so much chocolate in a matter of hours on Easter.
Those were the days that my sister loved the huge age difference between the two of us. It was Easter and it was Halloween because she knew that I had to do all the work, and then she just got to reap the benefits. Yep. She would just ravage through all my candy.
That was the same. My sister was a bully when it came to candy on holidays.
Yeah, I just wasn't that big. I wasn't big on it.
Oh, I was. I had to have a private stash. Like I had to move my hiding spot every year because my whole ass sister would come find it and eat it all, and not tell me. She would leave the wrappers. I'm like, that's the worst kind of crime.
It's like Clues.
Yeah. I'm like, I didn't say bitch back then, but I probably, if I knew the word, I would. I was like, why would you come into my private stash and eat the candy and not even have the common courtesy and decency to take the wrapper with you? She would just eat it, put it back in the bucket, or eat it and put it back in wherever I was hiding it. Oh, that was the worst.
Yeah, though that was a problem too at my house. But like again, getting back to the school thing, so Taylor opened up a lot of eggs that had candy in it that we got for her. Mm-hmm. So obviously she's not at a point where she needs a backpack, but she's got a backpack. She wants to be cool, so she wants to wear it to school. I was like, you can wear it to school. Then I had to check it before we got out of the car today because she put her Easter candy in there, and the school already gave me a warning. Like if she comes in with that backpack and there's candy in it and kids start digging into it, we could be responsible for allergies again.
Jesus.
I'm like, this is just too much, man. Just let the kids have some fun. And I'm sure we're going to get drilled with the parents that have kids with peanut allergies.
That's what I'm saying. Like, they're going to be, it's a serious thing. I know. So keep your kid at the house because literally every other kid is ruined. That was the one thing I loved to do. I'd get my candy on Easter Sunday. Monday at school, bro, I had pockets just like, yeah. I look like the Michelin man. I had so much candy in all my pockets, I would be sneaking candy all day.
I did anyway without the candy, so I was good either way.
But I'm like, man, all that's ruined. We would go to school and swap candy. Like, if I liked one thing and my buddy liked another, I'd be like, yo, I'll bring all the Kit Kats, you bring all the Reese's, we'll swap. It was the best, and now all these sensitive-ass kids.
Everybody's got it. Yeah, technical and a rule and all kinds of stupid stuff. All right, just getting started on the Usual Suspects. That means there's plenty of time for you to join in. 713-780-3776. That's our HRNP listener line. You can call that number. You can text that number. You can always reach us on Twitter, where it's at @ThePronounceNick, at @PacManJoel with a K, and at @BarryIsFunny. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere. It's right here on ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.
I see your dirty face hide behind your car.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, just the second segment of the show. It is The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. Always appreciate you taking us on the go wherever you may be. And, of course, you can always download the app, ESPN975.com. Take us anywhere, everywhere. Never have to worry about a thing or missing any part of the show. No signal issues, nothing. Check that out if you get a chance. And you can always click on the show tab and see if there's things you missed of previous episodes of The Usual Suspects. With that being said, anything spectacular this weekend?
No, I just did yard work. Met my new nephew. My brother-in-law brought him down from Arkansas. So
how old is he?
4 months.
Wow.
Yeah. Got to meet him. And yeah, it was a pretty chill weekend. A lot of yard work. But actually, usually I hate doing it. For some reason, I guess because the weather was so nice, I actually really enjoyed being out there this weekend. Got some stuff knocked out. Did y'all watch the movie?
Yeah, I did.
I did.
I'm going to say this. Before we get into more about the movie, because, I take to heart what you guys say in feedback about picking it, and it was kind of short, I'm fine with adding Homecoming or something else this week, too. I don't have a problem with it. I just thought that – I didn't realize it was 2 years old. I just thought it was kind of apropos because it had some sports to it, but it was a good story.
It was good. it's shocking, really, when you watch it. The big thing that stood out to me about the whole thing, if you guys don't know, the every couple of weeks we're doing now kind of a movie club thing where we give you homework over the weekend. You're supposed to watch a movie, and each week or each time a different host picks it. Joel this week picked you said Last Call, but it was Long Shot. It's the movie about a guy that
documentary
was convicted
accused of.
He wasn't convicted. He was accused of
murder. What amazed me about the whole thing right from the get-go is he had a ticket stub, and they were like, nope, not good enough. And it's like, I don't know what else I'm supposed to have. I've just randomly found a ticket stub.
I didn't know they had found a ticket stub. They just found the footage of him being there. I thought they couldn't find a ticket stub.
No, he had a ticket stub.
He had season tickets to someone else.
Not good enough.
No, he didn't have season tickets. Someone else had season tickets. Their season tickets.
He had the stub from that game that night where he said that was his alibi. I was at the game. And he had the stub, and they're like, not good enough.
Dodger game.
Yeah. And then, basically the gist of the documentary is that they were shooting
Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Larry David, yep.
Yeah, and he was actually... They were shooting it in the guy's section, and he ended up being there, and that was the proof that he needed to get it. It was fascinating.
It was really cool. Yeah, go ahead, Nick.
What's so funny to me is that Curb Your Enthusiasm is literally one of my favorite all-time TV shows.
Really?
And I've watched every single episode from season one all the way through season seven.
And you remember that episode?
And I totally remember that episode.
You called it right in the hallway to me when I was telling you the premise behind
and I hadn't seen the doc at that point. And it's so funny because they were recording a scene where Larry David was trying to make it to the Dodgers game on time, but there was so much traffic. So he decides to pick up this hot prostitute. Actually, this prostitute approaches him and he's like, you know what? Hop in. I need to hop on this diamond lane. They call it the diamond lane. We call it the HOV lane.
Right.
And that's how he was able to get to the game on time. So they had to shoot this scene with him, you know, with a prostitute at the game, because she eventually found out that he had a spare ticket and looked through his console, which was also funny. It was so funny. That whole series is funny. But yeah, I just remember that scene. I remember him walking down the steps. And then telling his little girl, hey, walk, it's time to sit down. Like, I remember that part of the show. Where
in the Curb Your Enthusiasm episode.
Which is so crazy to me.
That's weird,
And
man.
The thing that really got to me a couple things was, one, so the premise behind the story, if you haven't seen it, is the guy's brother kind of got off on the wrong path.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a case in which his brother was on trial. And the witnesses, one of the key witnesses to prosecuting his brother is the one that gets murdered. And so they immediately associate him with being involved in it. And that's where it all starts to go wrong. But the two things that stuck out to me was, one, he faced the death penalty. Because this lawyer that was prosecuting had a reputation for being hardball. So, and two, he's a father and he's got a daughter. And just the emotional scenes when he's, one, going to jail, and then, two, dealing with the fact that, you know what, he may never see her again and all the things that could go wrong was just, man, it'll pull at you a little bit. It was a good story.
I don't, like, I knew some of the stuff that he did, though, like not taking a lie detector. Like, I think I would have done that.
If you're adamant that you're innocent, absolutely.
I would have taken a lie detector. And I was reading about it, too, but they were saying, like, there were some things he didn't do that he could have done, but, you know, like, because his brother was involved, maybe he thought he would be asked some other things during the lie detector, but the other thing that I found out, how much did he get from the city? It was, like, $300,000?
300-some thousand, yeah.
Not enough.
I agree with that, too.
Not enough going through that. Like, you put me through all that. And you, like you said, you got a prosecutor that's out there that's...
Hate that woman. Oh, my God. She was driving me crazy during the documentary.
And I think that's a problem in general with prosecutors is a lot of times they don't care about the truth. They just care about a conviction. That's a real issue in our criminal justice system in general is that you've got people that manipulate the truth in order to get a conviction rather than just like, oh, well, if this guy's innocent, then he's innocent. So,
and she was undefeated with murder cases up until that point, which is like the makes for a movie. Like Except these are real facts. Like, that's so crazy that she was absolutely undefeated. He was going up against a prosecutor that's never lost in a murder.
And it makes you wonder how many of those people didn't have footage from a TV show to exonerate them that she put in jail for murder that aren't murderers.
That's exactly where I'm going with this, because we think about localizing this with this HPD case that's going on with this botched stakeout and breaking into the house and all those things. And then the guy, the detective, that's being... basically, they're finding out he fudged all this stuff. They have to go back on all of his cases now because he fudged so much more just to put people away. And in this case, to have those two detectives that had to admit while sitting there and questioning him, they were leading him. They, all their only goal was to try and get a confession or some way of being able to put it on him and pin it on him, even though they weren't sure it was him. It's there's some screwed up stuff in the justice system these days. There's no doubt about
it. It really is. And man, I didn't look at the details, but one of the guys that was convicted in the Bird case out in Vidor, just now going to get the death penalty. That was like, I feel like that was almost like 20 years ago.
That's the other thing. When you get the death penalty, you basically get an extension of about 10 to 20 years.
I don't get it. Yeah, it was 98.
Yeah, half the time when you see someone go into the chair in Huntsville, they recap the case and they go, "You remember from 1987 when?"
Yeah, I'm on the James Byrd's wiki. Well, the murder of James Byrd, that they have a wiki page for the details of it. Yeah, he was killed in June 7th, 1998.
Wow.
And one of the guys is just now going to get the death penalty. That's just ridiculous, man. Thank God the guy was exonerated, but two, it really does show you some that, not that we didn't need to know that already, but there's just so many issues within the system itself, man.
Yeah, I mean,
it's terrible.
You think about all the different things where we've gotten better in terms of being able, like, you know, DNA testing and all the different ways to solve crimes, but yet at the end of the day, just like we're talking about balls and strikes with umpires and everything else, as long as there's the human element, there are people that are going to fudge the system. There are people that are going to do it for their own set of goals and objectives other than someone who could basically lose their life or spend a lifetime in prison for something they didn't do. I'm with you. Like, half these guys that go to prison and then they find out like 10 years down the road they didn't do it, and they're like, "Oh, my bad, you're out." Screw that, man. You should be suing them for like millions.
Yeah. By the way, I said Vidor, I meant Jasper. And whoever texted and said Vidor, you mean Jasper, dumbass? Don't worry about texting again, because I'm going to block you, dumbass. You've never misspoken in your life? Get a life, weirdo. You're blocked.
So okay. There you go.
There you go.
All right. Half hour into the show, and we're going to continue to roll on. Like I said, I'm open to if you guys want to add homecoming. I didn't want to put y'all through that. I was hoping it got better, but after the first 20 minutes, I was like, I can't do this to the guy.
Oh, that's the Beyonce one.
Yeah.
No, I'm good.
Yeah. It was good. Lisa had suggested it, and I was like, all right, well, let me see if it's if Jay-Z's in there, and it's the making of it and all the different things with those two and the behind the scenes. And then the first two were just the first two songs from the Coachella performance, and I was like, I can't do that to the guys.
Yeah, I'm good. I love Queen Bee, but not enough to have to watch that.
All right, so we'll continue to roll on, but that was our movie club. So whose pick is it next week? Nick again?
Yeah, Nick, you're up again. No, it's my turn.
Oh, you started it with the Motley Crue documentary.
What was your first pick?
The Dirt.
The Dirt. That's what got it all the ball rolling.
Yeah.
Well, what got the ball rolling was Joel's participation. Finally watching something.
You know what you need to do when you're looking for good carpet cleaning? You need to participate like the usual suspects. And when you get involved into all the things that you got going on, I've got pets and kids and, you know, you've got high traffic areas in your house. But let's face it. I mean, it's spring and there's been a lot of rain and there's a lot of mud in and around your yard. And you come racing into the kitchen or into the living room and the carpet and the tile and the grout, it takes a beating. Well, I've got someone for you that's going to take care of all of that. They do a fantastic job. It's iHeart Carpet Cleaning. iHeart Carpet Cleaning is a new company, but it's derived from Danny Montiel, who has worked at other carpet cleaners in and around the Houston area, and he decided it's time to take charge and do things his own way so that it helps you and it helps him to get the best carpets, tiles, and grouts clean in your house or in your business. They don't use harsh chemicals. They use natural steam. It's safe for your flooring and for your family, and he cares. That means he's going to come to your house. He's going to do a small section of the carpet or the floor and show you what he can do, and then he's going to allow you to tell him if you want him to continue or you'd like to just wait, because he, more times than not, he guarantees that once you see what he can do, you're going to go and go with iHeart Carpet Cleaning. And right now, as an ESPN listener, you get a great deal. You get three rooms clean for just $97.50. Three rooms in your house, could be the living room, the family room, your bedroom, whatever it is. Three rooms, $97.50. Call Danny, and he will probably answer the phone directly. 832-926-8049. 832-926-8049. Give him a try, and you'll be back again, because I'm telling you, they do great work. It is iHeart Carpet Cleaning.
This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN975.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, half hour into the big show, it's The Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5. It's Barry, Nick, Joel on a Monday in the big city. Always appreciate you taking us along for the ride, wherever you may be. In H-Town, as we were talking about our movie madness pick, I guess we'll call it that.
Yeah.
We haven't really spent a lot of time trying to figure it out. We started it during March Madness, but we'll figure it out. Barry's got the next pick, so we'll continue to roll on. Hopefully you guys had a chance to catch up on some of that. I'm loving Netflix. I really am.
Yeah, that's good. I didn't get to do much sporting this weekend.
No?
Had fam in all weekend, and that made it a little more difficult. It's always harder to keep your routine, because I kind of have a routine on the weekends, and it's a lot more difficult when you have family in town. And not only that, but then, you know, I had a show and everything else going on, so I didn't get to watch a lot. I had a show the night of the Rocket game, and just ended up recording it and getting home and watching it, so at least I caught that. I'm pissed I missed most of the Portland Thunder series.
It's been interesting.
It's really been. I really wanted to see. I mean, I've caught bits and pieces of Dame and Westbrook going at it, but I feel like that's not the series, not the teams necessarily, but that matchup.
Yeah. I mean, ironically, everybody thought the Rockets Jazz was going to be the toughest round one matchup, and it's turned out to be anything but. And on the flip side, what was supposed to be and still has been compelling, because, like you said, because of the conflict within the series, but really 3-1 Portland at this point. It's not been much of a series there either.
Mm-mm.
It's been disappointing. And, you know, the biggest story out of it, aside from, obviously, Damon Lillard is just a badass.
Oh, yeah.
And the fact that he doesn't get engaged in all of Westbrook's shenanigans and talking and everything else, but he just puts up.
Boy, did he in that second half. 15 in the third quarter, and Westbrook managed to muster 1 point in the entire second half. And I not to be outdone, James Harden, boy. If ever there was a game that Utah should have won and needed to take advantage of a poor performance, that was it. Like, yeah. If you weren't going to beat the Rockets when James Harden goes like 0 for 15 and doesn't score from the field until 7 minutes left in the game, you're not going to beat the Rockets. It's just not going to happen.
And, you know, he said he didn't do anything differently. I mean, you think about it, and he said, look, I still took 20 shots. It's just I missed the first 15 of them.
It's going to happen sometimes. Yeah. Guys miss their shots. He's no different. I mean, I felt like they D'd him up better. I felt like that there were times when they would get behind him, which was really weird, as opposed to getting on his left and forcing him to take that step back
just
to the
bizarre.
Right. They would get behind him.
And we've talked
about it here. What are you doing?
Like, why are you giving a guy that just completely excels at going downhill, getting a step, 2 steps?
Yeah. I don't get that. I think that one of the things that was interesting is how many times he got his stuff blocked, though.
Oh, yeah.
It seemed like his stuff was getting returned to sender,
especially
left
in
and
the
right.
First quarter.
Now, is that block shots are a product of several things, athleticism, but a lot of it is timing. And it felt like the timing for James was off all night, because usually he'll have a bit more hesitation at the rim, and that's why he doesn't. You'll see him go in against a big guy. I mean, look at game one against Rudy Gobert. He went right at him and didn't get his stuff blocked like that. And I think some of it was he was off, his timing was off, and Rudy Gobert's timing was on.
Yeah, Rudy, you got to give credit to Rudy Gobert. I do feel like Harden was a little bit lazy with his approach, penetrating to the basket. He did look a little lazy sometimes, but I think you got to give a lot of credit to Rudy Gobert because his timing was on point. I mean, he knew when to jump.
Here's the bigger thing, too, is you got film to study within the series now. So from a Gobert perspective, from a Utah perspective, you realize, look, we've been in no man's land. Every time James gets himself and Clint Capella on either side of a defender, most of the time it's Gobert. And Gobert has chosen to kind of be passive. Now he's being aggressive. He's just going, you know what? Screw it. I'm going at James. I'm going to either try and block the over-the-top pass or at least put up a wall against James to prevent him getting the layup and take my chances that someone's going to help me behind with Clint. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is that it was working. But to your point, and I had a ton of people asking me, including guys I hoop with, Utah got any chance at all? I said, game three. I said it on the air. Game three is the one where if they're going to have any chance at all, and I don't think they had a chance to win the series. But I did think that for, like we talked about, the altitude, the home court, everything, they had a chance because of the fact that there were so many variables in their favor. And then when you factor in, if you'd have told me before the game, Harden's going to miss his first 15 shots. Crazy. I'd be like, damn, driver's seat, Utah. You better just make sure you drive it home. Yeah.
That's the thing is it was a very, I don't want to say scrappy, but it really was. I mean, first of all, you got to give a ton of credit to Chris Paul.
Yep.
The second star kind of stepped up big. I was kind of laughing about that. I wanted to text you and just be a dick about it. But I was like, oh, look at that.
Yeah.
They do have another star to step up. But, I mean, that's his job. Like, his job is to be the second hand, the second star when James Harden isn't performing. And this isn't the first time he's done that. He hasn't had to do it for an entire game. But he has had to do it in spurts when the rest of the offense goes cold. And you've noticed that what he does is he doesn't sit there and try to find guys at the three-point line because he realizes things aren't working right now. He'll go in. He'll get his own mid-range shot. He'll score 4, 5, 6 times, get everybody back in the flow of the offense again and keep it going. And it was required of him to do that for over three quarters.
Yeah, I don't know if he's worth $40-some million a year as this contract's going to continue to go higher and higher. But the one thing that you do know is when you think about it, even if you're a really good three-point shooter, you're going to probably make 40% of your shots. And if momentum is switching, the last thing you want to do is roll the dice on a 40-60 opportunity offensively, especially because when momentum starts getting into it, the crowd starts getting into it, guys don't shoot 40%. They get a little tighter. Chris Paul's smart enough to realize, I need a 50 to 60 to 70% make percentage, which means I got to get in the paint. I got to get my guys some layups. And I got to kind of retake the reins back from our offensive perspective. And he does that. And he's fantastic at it. And like you said, though, scrappy's a good word, but also a great team effort. Because you could go right down the list and have guys that made key contributions to pick up the slack. That's the sign of a really good team.
Go ahead.
It is a really good team. I think the only difference is when your star player, James Harden, is not playing up to par, the second star only scores 18 points. I mean, if you look at the Golden State Warriors, Kevin Durant scored 33 points. You know what the second star did? He scored 32 points.
Yep.
That's the different dynamic. And when your Chris Paul steps up and you only win by three against a team like that, that you're definitively better than, that tells you, that says a lot. I'm just saying. So
I know, and I don't want to have the second star debate again because
I was just making a point.
But what I'm saying is at the times when they needed him at crucial moments in the game, and they needed a bucket. Other than Eric Gordon hitting that shot to make it 94-90, there were multiple times in the game when they needed a score, and they got that from Chris Paul because no one else was able to do it. And I mean, at one point I was thinking, God, James Harden is going to have the ugliest triple-double in the history of the playoffs. He had 8, 9, and 6. And I was like, ugh, could you imagine a 10, 10, and 10 triple-double? I wouldn't even want that to count if I was James.
Just watch Kyle Lowry, except for one game, and you're lucky if you get that. But, you know, the thing I was going to say, though, Nick, is a lot of this is determined by the game itself. You know, this was a grinded-out game. This was a Utah team that prides itself on defense. So, not as high scoring to get the second score to the 30s. But I understand what you're saying in terms of you want a guy that's more kind of proactively aggressive for his own self. Chris has always been more of a distributor anyway, so it's tough to gauge him just on points alone because he does – like if you would look at how many plays Chris Paul had a part in, either a score or an assist, that would be a kind of a better one for him because he's not going to ever score like Kevin Durant night in, night out.
No, he won't.
But the thing that was bothersome to me was as much as this team has ramped up their defense, Donovan Mitchell got a butt-ass naked, wide-open three-point look down three at the end of the game, and that cannot happen. Can't happen in the regular season, should never happen in the playoffs.
Well, if you watch, you can see Austin Rivers losing his mind after the play.
Yep.
yelling at Capella because Capella didn't come through. He didn't pick up the screen. Gobert was able to basically screen off Austin Rivers, and it's Capella's job
to switch
and get up on Donovan Mitchell, but he laid back thinking that Gobert was going to roll, and he didn't roll. So now you got no guys defending, and when you have a guy, you know, that's a defensive stalwart like Capella, you can't have those kind of mistakes that late in the game. So he was like, well, what do you want me to do? And it's like, Austin Rivers, you can't climb over Rudy Gobert's back. That's all on Capella if he makes that shot.
That's,
I mean,
where,
that's 100% on him.
That's where Bezdelic's got to get involved now, because against Golden State, that's going to hurt.
Yeah, Klay Thompson, any guy on their starting five is making that shot at the end of the
Draymond
game.
Draymond might not. But well,
he'll shoot
that,
it, though.
Oh, he'll shoot it.
They're
for
not
sure.
going to set the play up for him to begin
right.
with. But there's three guys that for sure that'll knock that down.
Yeah, the one thing Utah's lacking, Golden State's not lacking. They got three guys that anywhere from the 3-point line in are going to bust your ass if you leave them open. So you've got to kind of, that's a teachable learning moment, but you better learn from it and never do it again, because it's only going to get tougher from here on out.
Speaking of tough, James Harden might be the toughest dude in the NBA. Not from a fight perspective. But from the fact that as he took a beating in this game, they roughed him up. Rudy Gobert knocking him to the floor every time he went in the air. The amount that fall that Favors fell on top of him. I mean, he took a beating. I'm sure that dude was sore the next day. But the fact that he never left the game, that he stayed in there, sure, some of it is probably a little bit of dramatics, and when he does get hit, that he overplays it. But he took a pounding in that game. And hats off to him.
I'll give you a couple things when we come back from the break that really made me believe that James Harden is a different player and he's more mature, and it's only going to help Rockets fans and the team as they go forward. So we'll continue to kick it around a little bit about the Rockets and the NBA playoffs. If there's something on your mind you want to join us with, 713-780-3776. Get it off your chest on the HRNP listener line. Call, text, or hit us on Twitter. Back with more. It's the Usual Suspects, ESPN 97.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5. This is The Usual Suspects on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 97.5.com.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Infuse energy into your life. Live from the ESPN 97.5 studios, here's Joel Blank and Barry Laminack with Nick Sciarra.
Hey, back, rolling through hour number one, 3-hour show. All we do is get buckets on The Usual
literally,
Suspects.
That was my impression of James Harden. The first three quarters. And
Barry's the worst with comebacks. He's always making noises or laughing or throwing a Coke. Just no studio etiquette whatsoever.
What are you talking about?
Hot.
Yeah, what? Yeah. He does do that. Hot. He'll like yell.
I don't know. I
thought you were going to throw it back on him. Like, bitch, isn't
that's
it?
That's what
your,
I thought. But
he
I got a weird ass response out of Barry.
Turn the mics on until we're fully ready and.
I thought about that, but he's right. I mean, sometimes you just take the L. He's absolutely right.
I was literally just trying to pick a fight.
I know. It was the wrong day, I'll be honest with you. You know as well as anyone, I'm in a bad mood today.
Fantastic. So what I was getting at before the break, a couple things. Because we were going back and forth on what was supposed to be the two compelling first round matchups, the Utah Rocket series and of course the OKC Portland series. Two things I'm going to give James Harden a ton of credit for, especially on a night like the other night when he wasn't shooting the ball well. Russell Westbrook's going to keep shooting, but he's going to keep shooting bad shots with a full shot clock, and he's going to say, basically, screw my teammates, including another all-star MVP-like candidate player, just because he feels like he's got to do it all himself. James used to be that guy, but to James's credit, he was able to defer until he got it straightened out in the fourth quarter so that Chris Paul and others could get involved more, and that kept him in the ballgame. Because I've seen this Rockets team fold up their tents and go home if James ain't making shots in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the first sign that I give Harden of maturity. But more so than anything else, and I've told you guys on this show on numerous occasions, one of those guys that tries to get under his skin, that tries to mess with his head, that tries to punk him, is Jay Crowder. The fact that normally James just takes it and runs over to the bench, and whether guys have his back or not, he's just going to, like, la, 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 I don't hear you. The fact that he went literally nose to nose with him.
Not the case this time,
yeah,
was it?
Didn't take didn't any
hesitate.
Crap from him.
Yep.
I loved every bit of it. I said that more than anything else. I said, he's different. He's mature. I like it.
I hate to be kind of the, because it was a great win for them on the road, tough environment, and you scrapped out a win. But if the Jazz just make their free throws, they don't win that game.
No.
Let's be real. I thought the Jazz played really good defense. One of the things they did differently, I mean, they still did the whole force Harden to his right or get behind him or some of those weird things when they were straight up one-on-one with him. One of the things that I did notice, though, is that instead of switching when the Rockets would set up a pick and roll or a pick up top, they started to double him. So they knew he was going to keep the ball on the pick. So instead of fighting through and keeping their man, they just doubled James, and I think that had a lot to do with their success with him early on. He had to figure it out, but it was a new wrinkle that I noticed that you didn't see in the first two games is off of a pick, nobody left James. They both double-teamed him, and I felt like that was a huge difference in the way that it forced him to do something different with the offense and kind of messed up their flow, and I felt like that had a lot to do with it too.
Yeah, and the thing is, this is what, but to get a win, like what you said, if they make their free throws, to get a win in a game you have no business winning can make your road to the playoffs and how deep you go so much easier than putting yourself in a situation like if you were down 2-1 and you knew that they could hold serve on their home floor and make this a long series tonight instead of looking to close them out. And you're right. As good as that was, and we have said about when we were getting ready for the playoffs, we had said, look, in the playoffs, be prepared for teams to double on the other side of the pick and push him towards midcourt, use the midcourt line as a third defender, and try and get it out of his hands. Make someone else beat him. But the whole, getting back to what you said initially, which it still boggles my mind, how any guy coaching in the NBA thinks that the defensive strategy to beat James Harden is to get behind him as soon as possible and give him a step. It's just beyond logic. The guy is so efficient with the ball in his hands. You want to get it out of his hands or you want to give him multiple defenders. You don't want to give him a head start and go, hey, as soon as you cross midcourt, I'm going to get on your hip pocket and get out of your way so you can start going to work.
I feel like the times that I've seen the most success with James Harden defending him is when you get an athletic long guy.
Kawhi Leonard.
Somebody that can stay with him. But can also, when he does that step back, has the length and the reach to either actually contest the shot or even block it. And you've seen times where guys will. So I'm curious, like, if it were me, and I know he's not the most athletic, but I probably would have Crowder or Favors on James Harden the whole time. That's going to make it really difficult for him. Now, I know that they're going to run the pick and roll, but guess what? If Gobert comes up and you run the pick and roll in the lane with Clint Capella, now you've got Favors or Crowder on Clint Capella, which is a lot better than having a guard on him.
I'll take it a step further. The fact that they have stayed consistent with Ricky Rubio trying to guard James Harden
stupid.
Is just asinine to me. You put Ricky Rubio on Chris Paul because whether you believe you or you believe Nick, but either way, somewhere in between, Chris Paul is not nearly what he once was when he was at his peak in this league. But Ricky Rubio has a pretty good chance of at least staying with Chris Paul. Why isn't Donovan Mitchell on James Harden? He's the most athletic.
Mm-hmm.
He has the hops. He has the speed, the quickness.
Short.
He's got reach. But here's what I'm saying. So why isn't he the primary defender? Then when the pick and roll happens, now you bring a Favors. Now you bring a long guy or a physical guy. Now you've got what you need. One guy in case he beats one guy off the dribble is quick enough. The other guy is either with reach or with physicality being able to try and stifle him a little bit, forcing it out of his hands. But the way they're doing this and the fact that they haven't changed it, they deserve to get swept out of the playoffs.
I would start with the big guarding Harden.
It's just that you talk about speed, that he'll blow their doors off.
But it's weird. Yeah, but again, you've got you're supposed to have a guy like Rudy Gobert in the lane for support. That becomes the problem. And I thought they did a better job of defending the pick and roll and the lob pass this time too against the Rockets. But somebody said, well, it's easy to say that they should have won if they make their free throws because James Harden went 0-15, and if he makes his shots, then the Rockets would have easily won. But there's a difference in being no one D's you up at the free throw line. That's just poor shooting on the part of the Jazz. Like, they played good. You got to give the Jazz credit.
The broadcasters joke about it, but there's no such thing as free throw defense.
No, and so that's why I'm saying, like, all the Jazz have to do is make their free throws. They played great defense against James Harden for 3.5 quarters. Give them credit for that. They shut this man down. That's hard to do. And what they did worked, but you notice, like, to your point about Rubio, every time he would make a three-pointer on Rubio, you'd notice he would do that hand motion where he would put it to the ground, like, y'all got the short dude guarding me? I'm telling you, he has a real problem with guys that have length on him.
No, there's no doubt. And again, any shooter, when you know that they can recover that quickly, is more cognizant of the fact that when they pull, they got to have space. But the other thing that even makes what Utah is trying to deploy defensively such a mistake is, all James has got to do once he gets that first step on Rubio is just stop. Just stop, and Rubio's going to run up his back and get in foul trouble, because every single time once he gets in front
That's
of him,
great point.
Just stop, and Ricky's going to be a backpack.
Kind of like when you get pass interference on an unthrown ball in football.
Yep.
Coming back for the ball, you're going to get that call every time. Yeah, that's a great point.
They haven't even deployed that yet. They haven't had to, because the one thing is, a lot of teams will do things for three and a half quarters, but in crunch time, you know that the one thing you want
to
do is stop.
Their tendencies.
But the fact that you opened the door wide open and said, hey, fourth quarter, you guys need a bucket. I don't care how cold he's been. I'm going to give James a step and get behind him.
Stupid.
It's just dumb.
Yeah.
Like I said, they deserve to be swept for that.
Somebody texted the show and said, music is on point today, boys. Thanks, man. Appreciate the...
Way to go, Nick.
I was thinking, I said boys, Nick. Boys. Like, we get credit for it.
Yeah, but he takes a lot of heat for the music a lot of times, too.
That's okay.
So, okay.
I'm not going to give him the credit.
All right.
Just the heat.
All right. Well, you guys can bring the heat if you want. It's one in the books. Still got 2 hours to go of the show. 713-780-3776, HRNP listener line. You can call, you can text, or you can hit us up on Twitter. Hour number two is right around the corner. It is the usual suspects, ESPN 97.5.